Hello, and welcome to Primary Sources, a featured production of Radio Cals. Here on Primary Sources, we focus on people who are making a difference in Little Rock and Arkansas. Some you might have heard of, and some you haven't heard of, but probably want to know about. Check out cals.org/podcasts for a free podcast of Primary Sources interviews.
This is Brian Robertson, and today's date is October the 20th, 2009, and we are in Hot Springs, Arkansas, doing an interview for the Arkansas Korean War Project for the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies.
I'm Jim Blaylock.
All right, Mr. Blaylock. I always start these interviews out by asking when and where you were born, so could you tell us that, please?
Yes, I can. I was an Okie. I'm born in Jinx, Oklahoma. November 28, 1928, but I am a true Arkansas Razorback.
Now, who are your parents?
My parents were Jim and Mary Blaylock. Mm-hmm. Her maiden name was Butcher Blaylock. My dad was a painter. He painted for Shell Oil Company back when they were putting up Shell service stations. And my mother was always a housewife. And then my dad got into the construction business, became a welder, mm-hmm. and traveled during World War II, what we called a defense work plants, and wherever they could get the best money. Uh-huh. And had the projects, and we ended up several places in Oklahoma, Louisiana, Sulphur, Louisiana, big octane gas plant, and then back through here. Well, he was originally born in Saline County, so it was kind of home here in Little Rock.
Right. Now, did you have any brothers or sisters?
Yes, I had four brothers and one sister.
Okay.
My little sister came along when I was 16, so and I have a brother that's same age as my first child. Huh. So he has an uncle his same age. Went to Catholic high school and went away to Villanova to attempt to be an engineer, and came back to Arkansas and went to school at Little Rock JC at that time for a year and a half.
Now, when was that you went to Little Rock JC, do you remember?
1947.
Okay.
I graduated in 46 at Catholic High, and 1947 and 48. And dropped out and got married and had a chance to go to Tulsa, which was back sort of in my area where my parents and grandparents had been raised. And I transferred better back up. I joined the 6th Rifle Company out here during my year at JC. And so I have to say, I forgot what that unit's numbers are.
Now, that was the Marine Corps Reserve?
Right. And we would go every summer to two-week camp at Camp Pendleton. Mm-hmm. And I was a total of 3 years and 5 months of my service time. And when we got called in, I went from Tulsa to Camp Pendleton.
Now, did you know a lot of the other fellas that were in the unit with you?
I had the Sullivan brothers were from Catholic High, so Jim and Bob. My brother Bob and Eddie Lewis was one of the boys that one of the guys that we played ball with. And we didn't know at the time, but John Yancey was a big hero from World War II, that the chapter was named after now, the Chosen Few. And let's see, I know Jimmy Purvis, I know Joe Burks. That I'm talking about being in the units that I'm in now, but Eddie was a, Eddie Lewis, we played ball together. Jimmy and I were in the, Jimmy Sullivan and I were on, in the football backfield at Catholic High at 45 and 46.
So do you remember speaking of 44, 46, or 45, do you remember much about following what was going on during World War II?
I only know that back when I was living in Oklahoma, I caddied at Southern Hills Country Club, which was about 2 miles up the road from us. And I remember that Sunday morning that I had caddying for these ladies when the announcement came that Pearl Harbor had been bombed. I never paid that much attention except the procedures and the progress we had as a nation and what we went through here at home and gas stamps and rationing on different things and some of the items that we couldn't get. And of course the announcements of the Gold Stars, the men had been killed, the sons, mothers, putting their sons' Gold Stars out, and husbands, of course, also. And my dad moved around with the different defense plants, I remember that. I remember the Marines making these different landings out in the South Pacific against the Japanese, more so than the war in Europe. I don't know why, but just that's about all I could say about that. I know that there was tremendous amount of sacrifices made for people in the United States to make the war effort successful like it was.
So what led you to join the Marine Reserves?
Brian, I think I'm going to say 47.
Okay.
Right after I came back from Villanova, I think I joined. And it was 1950 when I got called in when the war broke out in Korea. I don't have too much of a recognition of what was going on in between those times. Except we met and we had a meeting at out at Camp Robinson every week on the Marine Corps Rifle Company, 6th Rifle Company was called at that time, until I moved, and then they had theirs on a different day, but it was weekly.
Do you remember anything about once you heard that North Korea had invaded South Korea, did that even register at all with you? Or?
Yes, some, and you know, the call-ups and so forth of people that had that would be called in, National Guards, units being shipped out, stuff like that.
Did you think that it was going to affect you at all?
Never really did. It happened so quick. I did. I had two children. My daughter was 19 days old when I got called in. And I guess making a living and you know everything goes on with a young family, young couple, that I didn't have that much interest or knowledge of what was going on. You read it in the newspaper, but it goes on.
Sure. Somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah. So, do you remember what went through your mind once you heard you were going to be called up?
Well, yes, my wife could be, I was worried because she had the two little ones, but we were actually living in a rooming house that my grandmother owned, and we were renting from her. And so they were there to take care of her till she could arrange to come back to Little Rock, where her family was. So I thought, you know, that was something that would be, I'd get out and know, I didn't know I was going to be sent over that quick. I figured that we would train for, you know, 4, 5, 6 months or something at Camp Pendleton. But we were shipped out pretty fast. And we were there long enough to get about 15 shots to get you ready for that area over there. And you can't give them to you all at one time. And then we had gun drills and prepped our stuff to get ready to go. But
so you,
first thing I knew, I was on a big troop ship headed out. Mm-hmm.
So you went from Tulsa to Camp Pendleton?
Right.
How'd you get there?
On a train.
A train. Mm-hmm. Was it a troop train or?
Yes, it was. The whole units were shipping out, and they were coming from all of the different areas where they had these Marine Reserve units. And we were, at the time that the war broke out, or the Korean War started, units were twos to make a army. It was, they bring it up to war time, it was increased to three companies, three battalions, three regiments. And so we were integrated, the reservists were in with the vets that had been there all the time. And we had units, I mean, veterans coming from Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, as well as what we had in Camp Pendleton. So we were made into the 1st Marine Division. Mm-hmm. And I became assigned to the 1st Battalion Baker Company and a machine gun platoon.
So how did the regular guys feel about you reservists coming in there?
Well, they looked at us, you know, like you would any newcomers coming in, that you didn't know what you were doing, and we didn't. Like, they knew it. They had the experience and knew what was going to happen, and they were having to train us on a, you know, real quick regimen and time period, and we didn't really know. I was not aware that we was going to be shipped out that fast, as my wife had been making arrangements to come out there. Mm-hmm. And I had to go to camp, I mean to San Juan Ysidro in California to get to a phone to call her and tell her not to come. We were shipping out.
Wow. You remember when that?
Everybody was using the phones to notify their people. Mm-hmm. And
you remember when that was that you shipped out?
We shipped out, I got called in on the 10th of July, and I had 10 days to get my stuff in order, and then we shipped, got out there, and we made the Incheon landing on September 15th.
So did you, when you left Pendleton, did you go straight to Incheon, or did you stop in Japan?
We went to Japan.
Okay.
What they did, we put in at Kobe. They combat loaded the ship, and then we got back on and went back around. It took 5 days to go across from the United States to Korea. So, I mean, to Japan.
Right.
And then we went around and made the Incheon landing. And took Seoul, and then helped reinforce ourselves and get things, and went back on board the LST, Japanese LSTs, and went around the peninsula up on the north side, I mean the west, east side. We were on the west side, and went in at Wonsan, and the Koreans were breaking so fast to get back out of the trap that they went through at Seoul and get them back out of the, they had almost wiped out the whole peninsula down to Pusan.
So before?
And that's broke their back when MacArthur went in with the troops and we went through to, it broke through to Seoul. They were coming up the east coast as fast as they could.
So when you landed at Incheon, had you guys been following what was going on with the war?
Oh, yeah, well, we knew.
I mean, because you knew that the
North Koreans... Yeah, we knew we were headed that way, and that's what it was going to do. And then, of course, they briefed us that where we were going and what we were going to do.
Do you remember much about landing at Incheon?
Well, yeah, I remember a whole lot about it. That's the first time I was ever going down the nets to get into a Higgins boat, and waves are going like this, and...
So what was going
on? Getting in there, you're fully loaded with your 82 gear, and the machine gun weighs 41 pounds. And I remember getting in there when we took off. We was supposed to go to one spot to make the landing. And our Navy guy, he was using two smokestacks to guide him in. When we got there, where he's going to let us off, it was a seawall. We had to go over a seawall. And that was difficult to go over, because you didn't know what, once you got up there, what was going to happen. It was wide open, and fortunately they had moved. They weren't right there at us full strength.
Now, you remember what was going through your minds as you was riding that boat up to shore?
Yeah, praying.
Yeah, I bet you.
I was praying. I sure was, because I knew that. You know, you don't know what you anticipate, but you've seen them drop those, the fronts of those LSTs, and up you go, and good luck.
Yeah.
But good Lord was with me. We made it through. We had skirmishes. We actually spent the night, one night, on the campus of Seoul University.
Really?
Dug in there.
Uh-huh. So,
and when we were right downtown, the way they set up the perimeter was they put bazookas on one side and machine guns on the other. And right where the crosswords and crossroads at that time were in the Seoul capital.
So
I was there with. We did not have much of a battle right there. Our battles were more out to the outside at night. They were coming back during the daytime, hiding and attacking at night. But we went out.
So what was your impression of Korea when you got there?
Stunk like a devil. Was hot during the daytime and cool at night, but the further north we went, the colder it got. And,
did you see any civilians, or did they cleared out?
Yes, they were. And they would be notified that they were going to barrage that area and to get out as quick as they could, and some of them didn't ever pay attention to it, and they were, of course, naturally killed. Mm-hmm. But we moved through and took, you know, just steadily moved till they moved us back to Incheon to restaged to come out and go around to make where we were going on up north. The word was that we'd be home by Christmas, the Christmas offensive. And when we went into Wonsan, the South Koreans had already got taken care of it and run them out. But we there was a little town called Kojo that we were there was an air base right there at Wonsan, and we were guarding it. They were unloading our arms and supplies and so forth at this little village. And that night they only had the first platoon there. They got overrun. They were coming through there at night and to come out of the mountains and attack. So they sent our unit out to help get them back. We had a pretty good firefight right there that night. Then came out. I remember that, and they had I think there was four. Don't hold me to this, but I think there was four guys out of that first platoon that was about all that got out, other than being wounded.
That was your platoon?
No, mine was the second. It was Baker Company.
Okay.
It's 1st Platoon.
And you operated the machine gun?
Machine gun, yes. A 30 caliber light machine gun. And we came back and staged out of, went in alligators, and that's an armored vehicle that carried troops in and run right up on the shore. Uh-huh. And you come out the back of them to go. But since they had already gone by us, all we did was guard duty there till they load us back. And there was a, as we got further north, there was an old bombed out train that they had got fixed up. And they loaded us up at Hung Nam and started up into the reservoir.
Now, did you guys know where you were going?
No, we knew it was a reservoir, but didn't know. The Yalu River was our destiny. Mm-hmm.
So you knew you were going north.
Right, and we got up to, I guess this area, I'm really not familiar with what they call that area, but we dug in there to, the 5th and the 7th were ahead of us. I was in the 1st Battalion. And I guess we were to support their rear and till we moved on. It's sort of like there was only one way up that mountain trail. Mm-hmm. And then all hell broke loose. Wow. And they came down from all sides. And
that was the Chinese?
My unit never went further north than Corderie.
Okay.
Hagaruri and on up in there was around the reservoir. Mm-hmm. At the northern part of it. The 7th and the 5th really got the brunt of the heavy fighting. We had our share, but
what was that?
I had busted a knee. We went out and got ambushed one night, jumped off of this railroad track that I was telling you about, went across this rice field, and busted my knee. I just felt it give, and I knew that it was that I'd done something, but we fought back and got back to the regiment, and I walked on it 4 days, and it just kept getting worse, until finally I turned in and let them take a look at it, and we'll get you out as quick as we can, you need to go. So I think I came out on the 6th of December. Mm-hmm. And they gave me a rifle, M1, with one clip, and said, have this with you, because we don't know whether you'll make it down there or not, to take us back to Hung Nam. Mm-hmm. And well, there was a group of us in the ambulance, and I can't remember how many went back to that. And then they took us out of the hospital there to Japan.
Now, do you remember where you were when you were injured? Was that at Corderie or was that somewhere
else? It was at Kojo, below Wonsan. Okay. There, as when we had that attack, this knee would, it turned out to be, it was a torn cartilage, and it would shift and lock if you couldn't get it unlocked. And I would work with it till I get it unlocked, and I thought, well, I was staying with the unit, and we were going on. But once it locked up there where it got so cold, I couldn't get it undone.
I was going to ask you what the weather was like while you were up there.
Well, it was like it just turned colder and colder, and then it would snow a little, and then it would blow, and then they would tell you, well, you're going up 17 miles, and it's going to be real, real cold, and it was. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see it myself, but my Jimmy Sullivan was with Weapons Company, Heavy Weapons, and he was actually a commander, said he saw 39 below. So I would take his word for it. Yeah. But I did not see that myself.
And how were you supplied okay? Or
yeah, we got Army, you know, the Marines were not made for that kind of, at that time, were not made for that kind of warfare, and we got Army chew packs, Army parkas, socks, this stuff like that, the Army underwear, anything they had to get into those. Tried to have as many layers as you could stand on you. And it was, but the shoe packs had felt inner soles in them. And when you walked, your feet would sweat. And when you stopped, they'd freeze to the bottom of your foot. So a lot of guys got frostbite from their on their toes and heels. And if a person was shot in the legs or arm and a tourniquet was put on naturally to stop it, that part of the member would freeze. And that's something I think that they learned from fighting a war in the real cold weather. A man could get shot in the arm and it could get back to get work done on it. They strapped it to his parka. When they got him back to the hospital, his froze. They had to take it off. And they operated on my knee. I laid in the hospital with a young man that had been shot that way, and they had to take his arm off, and he had a contract with a St. Louis Cardinal to play shortstop and would never play again. And then guys that were had to have their legs amputated because they got shot, and they, you know, put a tourniquet on mm-hmm. to keep them from bleeding. I think things came out of that. I think now they still try to stop that with the pressure right mm-hmm. at the point of, mm-hmm. of entry. Mm-hmm. But it was not a pleasant thing.
So how did you guys sleep out there? Did you have tents?
Well,
did you have any kind of shelter?
Like 50 on, 50 off. Sometimes you didn't sleep any at all. And mm-hmm. Sometimes your buddy'd sleep and my assistant gunner would sleep and I'd be awake and vice versa. And we had 8 ammo carriers with each mm-hmm. gun so that we could have somebody protecting us all the time.
So you were the gunner, right?
Yes. There's two guns in a section. Mm-hmm. I was the gunner of one of them.
And you had to lug that thing around.
Pardon?
I said you had to carry that thing around.
Well, the tripod weighs about the same as the gun. The gun's 41, mm-hmm. tripod 41. And so it was about equal. The guys with ammo would carry a box of ammo. I forget what it weighed, but it wasn't an easy thing either way. Mm-hmm. But carrying that ammo at the top of those hills, they called, were mountains, mm-hmm. or water, in the 5-gallon cans and stuff like that you needed to get where you were was very difficult also.
Did you have an extra barrel for the gun? Extra barrel?
I had an extra one. Only, I'd say one time when you learn to not just keep firing that thing fast, you can fire it. If you don't, you're going to burn that gun out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had that, but we were, I can't say that we weren't well equipped, but the equipment that we had would be old mm-hmm. age to people today, if you told them about it. Then the recoilless rifle had just come in, you know, and it had mm-hmm. to be pulled. You could pull that through yourself. Of course, going through a rice paddy with anything is hard to go through mm-hmm. until it freezes over.
Right.
And they're wide open, so.
So once the Chinese got involved, did they usually attack at night? Is that how that would work? Or?
Yeah, well, they did basically at night or early morning. Mm-hmm. Like big morning, big raids came at morning. But once they tried to get you from all sides, it's daytime too. Was told it was like total 21 roadblocks to the sea from where we were when they trapped us. I didn't count. But you hear all kinds of numbers, you know, but you. Uh-huh. We came out, and most of our unit, there's still some up there, the Marine Corps, that the 10th Corps was. They couldn't get out, but we tried to bring everybody out they could. Mm-hmm. And that road was a single road, and even tanks had a hard time getting around and getting down. The Corsairs, Marine Corsairs, U.S. Navy, our air support really saved our cans up there, but we didn't have that worry with the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
I never seen a Chinese aircraft or a North Korean aircraft. But
now, how did they get supplies to you? Did they? By truck. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those guys were wonders too. Cause they'd go up and unload, go back to the coast and load up, come back again. You know, just a constant. All you could keep coming until we started back. Then they have to double up as carrying corpse out also, and bring the dead with us. I did not have it near as bad as those guys in the 7th and 5th. They really had a tough time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were ahead of us. And
right.
But we did keep the road open, and
yeah,
so we could all come out together.
Right. So you did okay. Did you have enough food and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, there was just a couple of days, maybe three, that it was cloud cover where they didn't know, they couldn't drop supplies to us. But other than that, what was coming up, they got it up. I never was hungry.
Uh-huh.
And it was hard to eat. You'd have to throw those sea rations in the fire if you had one going, you know, to keep them the freeze.
Uh-huh.
We had the Thanksgiving dinner. I remember we took a tray. They go, "You will have Thanksgiving dinner." We did. They took, so many of us could go back at a time. I put those mashed potatoes on the tray. You went to eat it, you froze. But I had a turkey leg. I eat some of it, but I didn't get all of it. But they took, you know, we did have coffee, we did have tea. But,
so did the cold affect your weapons or equipment at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. We learned afterward that you could fire automatic weapon with that oil. You always were taught you better keep that barrel greased, that mechanism ready. We found out the Chinese were using graphite for theirs, and that burnt gum would just, you know, fire right away. Your oil would begin to freeze up, like get icy on the machine guns. And of course, the heavy weapon, the 50 caliber had water cooled. They had to get antifreeze in there, and lots of times I don't think it was available. Mm-hmm. That was weapons company that normally would come up at night to help, you know, reinforce you. But we had carbines, old 15-round carbines had just got there too. And they had come out with the 30 shot. What do you call it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we had those. But they were kind of erratic. They would throw a shot. It wasn't directly, it would throw it. So we had some malfunctions on those. But
were you able to keep in touch with home at all while you were over there? I guess you were moving around so much.
Was told after we got back that we were surrounded, in that it was very difficult to get out. And my mother and grandmother spent the night in the church praying one night when they heard that on the news. They didn't have television up there at that time. They had radio and they had newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we weren't notified how bad it was either till we got back. Now he actually got to Japan.
Mm-hmm. So did you ever run into any of the other Allied troops, any of the British or any of those guys?
I didn't until we got back down to Hungnam, and then any of those that were being airlifted out or brought into the to come out in the ships that they were loading the LSTs, I did see some of the British. Mm-hmm. They, on our side, there was not as many as I don't think as they were over with the Army on the other side, mm-hmm. but we did have a group of them in there. They were a part of our ancillaries or whatever they call those guys. They were there. I just didn't see them. Mm-hmm.
So you left from Hungnam and went to Japan?
Yeah, went north. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the port of, and then we left out of there going to Japan.
Right.
Back to the, I was operating on at the Yokosuka Hospital, which was a little bit below Tokyo, at a big naval hospital there.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how long you were there at the hospital?
Well, when I got operated on and taken care of, then they sent us to a rehab. You'd be supposed to be back to duty in 6 weeks with this type of injury. And it was called Camp Otsu. Mm-hmm. And then we did some material work, like supplies and different things, sort of that, and rehab your knee at the same time. I had a corpsman there that would put you through your exercises and things to do. I saw Army personnel now in Marine. But, I was one Army man, well actually he was a sergeant of a weapons company out of the, there was a brigade that was almost wiped out Army on the to the west of east of us, mm-hmm. that came back down to the East Coast, that he was put up to enforce this unit, and the next morning there wasn't nobody here there but him and his two guns, and they got back, but they lost some people too, but he had been wounded, and he said he never got a notice or anything. They pulled out during the night, I guess they could hear, but he didn't know that that's what they were doing.
Huh.
And he was kind of mad. He was man, I can't wait to get out of this outfit. But I think everybody just had to really get together for anybody to get out of that trap. Mm-hmm. And didn't realize how many was out there against you. But I guess out of all that chaos, whatever you want to say, though, some of the things that you see, we sailed up and down that coast trying to get into Wonsan for about 10 days waiting for them to clear out the mines. They had mined that harbor. So if we'd have gone in there to make a landing without that happening, no telling how many of us would have been in that bay.
Mm-hmm.
But we were on a Japanese LST, and I remember going through the line getting food, and be bread there and then have dots in it, and they'd say, oh, I'd eat them, you know, as maggots, but or whatever it is in the bread that you get.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like meat, eat it, so we did.
Just a little extra protein.
Pardon?
I said just a little extra protein.
Yeah, protein. Yeah.
So what happened as far as once you were getting your knee rehabbed and all that?
It came back to me. It was all right. I was able to function fine. In the meantime, my wife had applied for a dependency discharge, mm-hmm. here, and I didn't know until the colonel called me in and told me the facts. And do you want to go, or you have a right not to go? And I said, I think I should be there, but I have two small children, mm-hmm. so.
Were they in Little Rock by then?
Yeah, they were back here.
Okay. So how did you leave? Did you go back by
ship?
No,
I flew home.
Oh, you flew home.
They sent me to this airport, Kempo, at Wonsan. It was not Kempo. And processed me. I'm getting confused. Not Kempo, that's Korea. Mm-hmm. The air base there at Yokosuka, and I got a flight home in one of the Army transports. We landed at Midway, and then we landed at Hawaii, and then we flew into Treasure Island, San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And then I was discharged in April through the process.
Right.
So I came home on a troop train, just a regular train coming back the same mm-hmm. way I came in.
Yeah.
And got off at Tulsa. I mean, got off at Little Rock.
Little Rock.
Mm-hmm.
So did your wife greet you there, or?
Yes. Yeah. Didn't tell her I was coming in.
Uh-huh.
Because I wasn't sure when they got on that train how long, how many days it was going to take, so didn't have a phone.
Mm-hmm.
So it took about 3 days to come across there. And I just got it. I knew where her address was by that time. And got in a taxi and come home and surprised her.
I bet she was really surprised.
Yeah. She was my brother's wife. They were living together, the two of them in the house. So
uh-huh.
She was there. Ann was there too at that time.
I bet that was a pretty good homecoming.
Yeah, it was. But you know, so many people, they weren't. I was surprised that even though what had been going on wasn't a whole lot of term of interest in Little Rock.
So you didn't feel like people were really paying attention to what was going on?
Not as much. I think by that time they thought we had it won. Mm-hmm. You know, but. They went into that Artemisius later on, but my unit went back around, went in to the war again, mm-hmm. you know, at that time. And like I said, on the 38th parallel then was where it all stopped. And, I came back and got a job, and you know, I really can't tell you about much about what went on over there after that, too.
Mm-hmm.
I read on it and kept up with it, but they weren't identifying units or anything, that mm-hmm. you knew where your unit was.
So I remember at one point there was some talk about using nuclear weapons against China and invading, you know, MacArthur wanted to invade China and take the wars to China.
That was before, when he wanted to go on in and they refused him.
Right.
They wanted to bomb those bridges over the Yalu River back, mm-hmm. and that was our deal to be home.
Right.
Or the Christmas offensive was to be home by Christmas. So then it all became, I think, political after that. Yeah. There was a lot of talk every which way.
Right.
So I don't remember too much about the nuclear. I'm sure it was in there.
But yeah.
I can't tell you that I really remembered any of it.
So what would you say your lasting impression of Korea is? If whenever you think about Korea, is there something...
I wouldn't want to go back.
it comes to mind.
I didn't know where the place was when we were going, and mm-hmm. I didn't see anything over there that was worthwhile that I'd want to. Of course, I know it changed, but... Mm-hmm. It was very, very backward at that time, and one thing I could say that their soldiers could live on a ball of rice, where we had to have sea rations, mm-hmm. and stuff. They'd come out of those villages with a ball of white rice, and that was their, mm-hmm. that's what they ate. And I know when we first went in, the rocks, they were more so than us, were using them to reinforce the army units that were being decimated down below, they were using. And then next morning, they'd be gone. They didn't have any discipline in it. But I've been told since they're one of the finest armies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my contractor here is in the Air Force, and he went to Korea later on after the years, and he said they were really great fighters. And,
mm-hmm.
Discipline and everything, they were well in hand with the world.
Yeah.
So I would think that we probably well taken care of there in South the south part of Korea.
So what do you think about the United States' decision to send troops over there in the first place once North Korea invaded? Do you think that was we should have just stayed at home and let them fight it out?
No, the deal was that if we got to stop them there, or the next stop would be Japan. Mm-hmm. And after that, they could come right on over to the United States. Mm-hmm. And the Chinese were huge, you know. So once they committed themselves, we didn't know how big it would be. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't, but I could see that was a necessary thing to do at that time, to stop them there. And I kind of feel the same way about what's going on over there, but I'm not committing the guys to get their heads and arms and mm-hmm. legs and everything blown off over there either.
Right.
But one of my dear friends out of Tulsa did in the last 3 days after we hit them. And you know, you don't think about that until it happens. And, mm-hmm. But then there was other guys that we made it back all the way, and we can talk about it today.
So what did you end up doing once you came back here to Little Rock?
When I went, first of all, I was offered a job selling insurance. Mm-hmm. And I went to work doing that, but I didn't really, that really wasn't for me. And ended up, I was playing ball and got a chance to go work for school supply outfit, Allstate School Supply. And I worked for them about 3.5 years, and Mr. Rogers, Lee Rogers, who owned Spalding, bought Farriers. It was an old Army Navy store, and turned it into a uniform company. And I worked for them on selling uniforms all over the United States. Arkansas for 8.5 years. Police, fire, postman, sheriffs, and the old Tough Nut factory. We sold those work clothes for all the different companies that wanted to have uniforms and put their names on them. And it was a big business at that time, until the laundries came in and started supplying those same outfits for a price with the names on them and the laundry service too. Then I went to work for Little Rock Distributing Company and worked 33 years in the liquor business.
Okay.
And retired in 94.
All right.
Moved to Hot Springs. We wanted to retire at Hot Springs. We'd always raised our family in Little Rock, but used to come to Hot Springs for recreation. Mm-hmm. The lakes and this is where we are.
That's where you are.
My wife and I and the kids are scattered, but uh-huh. close. Uh-huh. We got a couple that live in New York and one in Springfield and one in McKinney, Texas. And the rest of them are right Little Rock, uh-huh. Hot Springs, close by.
Well, that's good.
North Little Rock.
So is there anything else you'd like to share about?
No, Brian, it's been a privilege for you to come to my home and our home and do this much for us. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate the thoughts and what your organization's trying to do, because we had been forgotten. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we had to prevail where we did, it could have been a difference. They could have overrun Korea totally, and we would not have that area, and we might, you know, have lost Japan or mm-hmm. been in a crisis at that time.
Right.
So I cannot fault what they did. I'm thinking that probably we were better off to have done that particular phase in the war, right, to stop it there, although it's broken out in other places.
Sure.
We are the savior of the world here, it seems like, or try to.
All right. Well, we certainly appreciate you being a part of the Arkansas Korean War Project. Well, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you again and all your organization.
Okay. Thank you.
You've been listening to Primary Sources on Radio CALS, a production of the Central Arkansas Library System, its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies, and the CALS Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information, please visit cals.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley. Production manager is Shelley Stormo. Voices by Jasmine Job and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Anna Lancaster and Shelley Stormo. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell-Hoskin and David Strickland.